You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It's 8:06 now. Nice to have you here on this Tuesday morning, May 6th, 2025, from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media radio network. Sam is on the board in Madison. Greg is back in an hour at Radio Park for a matinee on air. And coming up shortly, we'll be talking to Chad Holmes, finding out what he's working on over at 98.9 WXCO in the Wausau area. We will also be talking to Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area and Civic Media's political editor about things happening in the Wisconsin legislature this week. Some of them interesting, some of them productive, some of them not so much. Here's what's productive. A gorgeous forecast that lets you plan things out. Meteorologist Brittany Merlot is back with us. We were just talking to Hans Breitenmoser and Sheila Everhart about getting out and doing the field work. And I didn't want Hans to feel bad. But the way that my wife, who grew up on a farm herself, put it, as she, we were looking at everybody planting and doing field work, and she knew the forecast, and she was like, if you don't get your field work done by the end of this week, you're not doing it right. Which right. I know some folks might take issue with that, depending on the size of your farm. But she's driven that tractor enough times to know, man, this is the week to get stuff done.
Oh, that is such good news. And it looks like we're staying nice and dry the entire week. And that even wants to continue into next week as well. So we are looking at some perfect temperatures, wonderful conditions. Of course, you're going to need those sunglasses today. It is sunny, bright and beautiful, calm winds. The patchy fog has burned off. Our temperatures are rising really rapidly. We're already in the low 40s to low 60s. Well, Paco, you're at 60 degrees right now, and we're going to keep climbing to those mid to upper 70s statewide today. So it's going to be beautiful and fantastic. The only thing we've got going on is some high pollen throughout the entire state. So if you have allergies, they're going to be flaring up, and also a fire danger. It is very high into northwest Wisconsin, and it is high throughout central and northeast Wisconsin. So please avoid burning. Don't toss your cigarette butts. Watch that tractor equipment as well. And then tonight, we're going to have another frosty overnight, especially into the northern half of the state. Tomorrow, we get a little cooler as a cold front drops through, upper 50s to 60s north. And we could still see some low 70s by the state line far south. But a chance of a few brief sprinkles could pop up with as that cold front moves through tomorrow. But then another frosty overnight. So just be careful if you're doing any planting and things like that. We are still dipping to that freezing mark on occasion with this clear skies and nice sunshine.
Yeah, Sherry was mentioning that. She's got these big flower pots, you know, that she normally has filled by now, but because of travel plans, it's going to have to wait a couple of weeks. And she's afraid that all the good flowers will be gone at the greenhouses. But she said, on the other hand, she doesn't have that thing of, oh, I got to move them all in the garage, or I got to cover them up with a blanket. So if you do have yours in, you have to be mindful of that this week.
So, absolutely. Yes, tonight and tomorrow night, 100%.
Are you much of a plant person yourself?
I am. I love it.
You are. Oh, see, that was not something that Sherry had, shall we say, early in the marriage where, I mean, we killed a cactus once. That's we're just not. No, seriously. And now, I mean, she is just taken to it. And there's so many flowers and landscaping and everything. And the thing is, her spring allergies are just like yours. They get bad. But she's like, you know. But you still love it out here. It's the price you pay.
Yep, I agree with her. I'm just like her. Love it.
Yep. All right. Well, how about Chad Holmes joins us as well from 98.9 WXCO. Chad, green thumb over there for you. I think you're on mute, by the way, before you answer that question. So, where are you on the planting of things?
Man, I have nothing when it comes to a green thumb. I have nothing for anything this morning. I'm still getting used to the timing because I had I'm running around, and I always hear Pat Kreitler say, "Oh, and Chad Holmes is coming up." And, oh, geez. I sprint back and get hooked in and
enjoy. Like you should just do it and close.
Oh, man. Chad. Mr. It's Holmes, way too early for all this stuff.
5 minutes, Mr. Holmes. 5 minutes.
I know. But no, I'm not much of a plant person. My mom is very much so. She does all sorts of things at her place, but it has not passed down to me.
Your mom hasn't given you the plant to be like, come on, you can take care
of it. Oh, she's tried, but hasn't quite got me there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you've got the greenery behind, over your left shoulder there. I mean, so I mean, you may not have planted that, but it looks perfect. Brittany, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. So Chad, as you wander the hallways of 98.9 WXCO waiting for your time, it's because... there's no shortage of other things for you to work on, both news and sports this time of year. How many games are you working, you know, in a typical week right about now?
Oh, four.
Okay.
Somewhere in that general area. Sometimes a little in that general area. Yeah. So,
okay.
One yesterday, got one today, got one Thursday, got one Friday.
Okay. I wanted, unless you've got something you want to put up first, I wanted to get your reaction to the news story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning that says Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson is warning that congressional Republicans' budget will fail without, and this is where normally people would say, preserving Medicaid or something like that. But no, he says it will fail without deeper federal spending reductions. And so everything else that's been done to this point, all of this chaos, for Ron Johnson, it's not enough. This multi-millionaire who rigged the tax code to enrich himself and his biggest donors is saying, we haven't cut enough yet. And I can't imagine that Tom Tiffany will be far behind. They're seeing all this damage and going, nope, we need more.
You know, it actually, that is right along the lines of something that I was thinking about yesterday as I was scrolling through the news and trying to get, you know, all the information out there. And I came across this discussion on CNN from a representative named David Joyce. And I think this is the mindset that Ron Johnson has and also Congressman Tom Tiffany has. The discussion was concerning the dolls and Christmas and you're hearing a little bit of this. But he was saying that the idea that the Christmas trade is already starting to slow down, there might be less around. I get it. Then he says, this is the money shot right here. I think the American people will understand that because the American people understand shared sacrifice. And the first thing that pops into my mind is, yes, the American people, when asked to, I think are willing to sacrifice. But what is the purpose of the sacrifice? And the only purpose of this sacrifice that I think the Republicans are asking the American people right now is to sacrifice your own standard of living so tax cuts could be had for the richest people in our country. I don't see anything else that Republicans are asking us to sacrifice for. It's the sacrifice so there's more money in that pot for the massive tax cuts that Ron Johnson, that Tom Tiffany, and Donald Trump and every other Republican seems to want. Yes, I'm willing to sacrifice for the better good. I guess I'm fortunate in a sense where I'm happy if I have enough money to pay my bills, to, you know, maybe go out once in a while, have one pretty good vacation a year. But these people, it's just insanity, the greed. And again, the American people would be I would sacrifice to make sure that our planet is sustainable for future generations.
Yes.
But not for tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans.
I think that's the thing that they're not getting is that you've already pulled the curtain back. We already know that if you'd asked, let's sacrifice $2 to $4 trillion, okay? Because our national debt is at $36 trillion. And so let's really make a shared sacrifice to attack it. Now, I think some people would say, eh, but other people might say, okay, let's really tighten the belt for a short time. But that's not what this is. It's to completely offset tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. There will be no savings to the national debt from this at all. Zero. If anything, it's going to be made worse because you know they're going to push the tax cuts through anyway. depending, even if there aren't enough spending cuts to balance it, they're fine growing the national debt.
Right.
As long as it gets the tax cuts that they want. It's just so amazingly disingenuous. But again, you've got Ron Johnson saying it's not enough. You've got Derek Van Orden saying, oh, well, I fought against a move to shift 25% of SNAP food benefits onto state budgets. Well, I honestly think that's posing for holy pictures. I don't think that was ever necessarily going to pass. But if you propose it and then get members to say I'm against it, you create the illusion that you're actually doing something. And I think that's what we've got right now.
And that is all it is. It really is. You're exactly right in calling that out. And if there is some other higher purpose that all of these cuts are going towards, I have yet to hear it. And again, it's what the purpose of it, and the constant chirping from people like Trump that the greatest era of American prosperity was back in the late 19th century, early 20th century. Anybody with a brain, anybody has any sense of history, realizes the incredible hunger and the incredible stress that were on millions and millions of people during that time. Yes, the robber barons got rich.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's where we are right now. And unfortunately, I don't think people really do put it all together in that sense. The idea that these policies are going to lead to incredible strain, not just on the individuals, but on all the services and everything else that are part of the fabric of what this country is in terms of keeping people living at a reasonable level. And so we're not it's amazing that we're talking in this way, that the Gilded Age is somehow right. Some sort of sunshine in the past that we should be trying to go back to.
And it didn't get better until enough people suffered that it provided enough fodder for Upton Sinclair to write The Jungle and for all the muckrakers at Harper's and other magazines to expose all of this. Why are we waiting for things to get that bad to then expose it and then make things better when we went through all this 125 years ago, and yet history is repeating itself here.
Real fast, Pat, when you mentioned that, that's one aspect of this country that I wish we were a little bit more forward-thinking, because the only reason that we do have Social Security and unemployment insurance and a lot of the other New Deal legislation is because we hit rock bottom. And unfortunately, in this country, it feels as though the only way that significant change occurs is when we are in emergency situations instead of being a little bit more proactive. And I just wish that would be a thread of our American psyche that would change. And I think it would make things a lot better.
Well, and there is, sadly, a lot of selfishness out there. When we talk about shared sacrifice, look at all the people who pushed back against basic safeguards during a pandemic. They could not be inconvenienced during a pandemic to take on anything. Now that I've left you all of, 15 seconds, any other stories you're following that people should be watching for you to work on?
And I think something I'm going to be talking about here in our local segment in a few moments is the constant, there's a real chasm when it comes to this idea of the Ethics Committee and Doug Dinney. And it's really, I find it interesting in a lot of ways, but also it is something that shows, I think, again, a difference in the thinking of folks. And I fail to understand why having standards that we expect from some of our elected officials seems to be something that is pushed back by a lot of people. And I'm going to say there's a lot of people out there that are saying that we are silly in terms of trying to get some accountability here.
Catch Chad on 98.9 WXCO in Wausau or on the Civic Media app and visiting with us a couple times a week. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat.
Dan Schaefer on the way from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota. Thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, don't forget to sign up for our daily newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. Also follow us on social media at upnorthnews. There's a story there about Jake Lawler, executive chef of Vintage Brewing Company in Madison, who is one of 12 contestants competing for $250,000 on NBC's new cooking show, Yes Chef, judged by Martha Stewart and Jose Andreas. Each chef was nominated for some kind of distinctive behavior, and apparently Jake's is his temper. We'll see how well that goes over. In today's newsletter, it includes a feature story about the International Crane Foundation based in Baraboo, helping protect 15 crane species in 50 different countries. Christian Yelich hit a two-run homer, and Tobias Myers pitched 5 1/3 strong innings to help the Brewers beat Houston last night 5-1. They will play again this evening. The pregame begins at 6:05 on several Civic Media stations. Head over to the website to learn much more about that. We'll be talking with Dan Schaefer in a little bit about the many lawsuits that Governor Tony Evers and Attorney General Josh Call have had to file to try to stop some of these budget cuts that, again, were approved by Congress. And that's the gist of this. You see, in the olden days, prior to you-know-who shredding constitutional norms, disputes were often settled at the negotiating table, often between Congress and the president. But now that Congress has become a wholly owned subsidiary of Trump, Inc., thanks to people like Tom Tiffany and Derek Van Orden, it's been up to the courts to try to rein in these extra-legal power plays. So through Evers and Call, Wisconsin is now involved in 14 different lawsuits attempting to halt America's slide toward authoritarianism. The latest one announced yesterday challenges the legality of massive cuts to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. This is cuts to spending that Congress has approved, and presidents alone do not have the power to cut those promised funds. Again, this was established 50 years ago. And if you ask me, it's taking courts a mighty long time to reaffirm the obvious. But in announcing the suit against these Health and Human Services cuts, give a listen to the things that Governor Evers says are on the chopping block. And again, remember, this isn't saving money. This is simply to take that money and give it to millionaires and billionaires through tax cuts. And in doing so, it means canceling a critical test for the bird flu virus. And terminating top veterinarians overseeing a national response to this emerging health threat. There's effectively eliminating the Head Start program with no clear plan on how to support Head Start, forcing centers to temporarily close, delays in making payroll, causing many Head Start programs to be at risk of pausing or ceasing operations altogether. There's terminating the low-income home energy assistance program to help offset high utility bills for millions of people. The closing of substance abuse and mental health services administration offices, including shutting down the 988 National Suicide Prevention Lifeline program. That's one of the things that could be cut if all of these Trump must cuts go through. And laying off and terminating approximately a quarter of HHS employees, 20,000 job losses, with responsibilities that included, but were not limited to, vaccine research, responding to lead exposure incidents like the one in Milwaukee, assisting with senior and aging adult programs, among many others. And again, that's just one of the 14 different lawsuits that Wisconsin is now a part of, trying to make sure that funds that were already approved by Congress get used for their stated purpose and don't get sidetracked to offset tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. In the meantime, because again, that's the real story here, is the money that's being taken essentially out of your pocket. These are your tax dollars going for these services. But to essentially distract and divert attention, you're seeing things like Donald Trump saying over the weekend that the Alcatraz prison needs to be rebuilt and reopened. And he had a long rant post, I know I'm being redundant, about, you know, the dregs of society need to be locked up. No longer will we tolerate these serial offenders who spread filth and bloodshed and mayhem on our streets. And so we need to rebuild Alcatraz. And as Judd Lonsberry puts so well and so briefly on Twitter, look, When Alcatraz was built, the murder rate in the U.S. was 9 per 100,000 people. The preliminary data for the murder rate in 2024 is about half that, 4.8 per 100,000. So Trump loves fear-mongering. Republicans love to fear-monger about crime. I mean, remember Ron Johnson's last campaign? It was all about fear-mongering about Mandela Barnes and crime. Has he struck you as some kind of a crime-fighting superhero since then, or was it a very convenient way to win re-election? And that's the kind of diversion that we're seeing from Trump, along with this other one that I still chuckle at. He wants to now pay migrants $1,000 to self-deport. Again, how much money does he think people are making or can make in jobs here compared to jobs back in, you know, El Salvador or Mexico or Venezuela? It's why your great-grandparents or others did whatever they could to come to this country because of opportunity and safety for their families, knowing that there were risks involved. And again, immigration needs to be reformed in this country. We need to fix this. There was a way to fix it last year, a bipartisan bill. And Donald Trump wanted to instead demonize the issue, politicize the issue, and use it as a diversion, as all of these tax dollars are removed from vital programs that you were expecting to pay for and instead are going to go to tax cuts. Hey, thanks for making this a place to spend some time as part of your mornings, powered by Up North News. We'll have more with Dan Schaefer right after the Midwest Farm Report for some of you here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Well, kids, the time has come. I must contemplate that it is time to capitulate about the benefits when we celebrate and educate all that Dan Schaefer can orchestrate. So allow us now to recombobulate with one Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area and political editor for Civic Media, because that's the way that he operates. Mr. Schaefer, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Kreitlow. Thanks so much for having me on. And thanks for the wonderfully poetic introduction there this morning. I appreciate it.
I aim to be the Nipsey Russell of hype for the recombobulation area, if I can pull that off. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Doing well. Waiting for spring to really kick in here in Milwaukee, but doing well.
Well, there's different signs of spring for everybody, and maybe we'll get into it later, but the last week you told us about some big, ugly boat that's stranded. But maybe that thing is about to finally be moved, and that would be a sign of spring. If you can get that far enough away from the Summerfest grounds, then you can open up the grounds and things warm up there finally by the lake.
Yeah, the city of Milwaukee is trying to do a little bit of spring cleaning today, I guess, on the shores of Lake Michigan, by trying to move this boat. That has been sitting between Bradley Beach and McKinley Beach on Lake Michigan on the lakefront in Milwaukee for more than 6 months now. Mm-hmm. It beached there in October, and they've tried several times to move it. The last time they tried to move it, the boat that they got to try to move it also got stuck. And frankly, at this point, I'm rooting for the boat. I'm rooting for the boat to stay. because they've made such a big deal of this. They're closing down Lincoln Memorial, the big boulevard on the lakefront today to move this boat. And last time they did a big to-do of it, and the mayor was there and all of this, that they were unsuccessful in their efforts. So, you know, I'm absolutely rooting for the boat in this one. It's just too funny.
Why not? Absolutely.
Hilarious
things that you would not expect. now there's the things that you do expect, and that's part of what we're going to get into first off when talking about the Wisconsin legislature. And it's a familiar pattern where the Republican leadership passes bills that they like. They sound good, makes them feel good. They know Governor Evers is going to veto them. He vetoes them. They attempt an override. They, of course, can't override. And they would learn their lesson, right? And never try to pass bad bills like that again, because they're not going to get signed into law. No. And that seems to be a theme with some of the bills in committee this week. And Dan, I don't expect you to know the answer, but we'll ask it anyway. Why passing the same bills over and over again, knowing that Governor Evers is going to veto them?
You know, we're in this era of divided government, mm-hmm. and we have been since Tony Evers took office in 2019. You know, we're in the third year of Tony Evers' second term as governor, and the Republicans in this legislature still haven't seemed to figure out that they are working in a space of divided government. And so one of the there's a package of bills that's making its way through the state legislature on reforming kind of the unemployment insurance program. And as so many Republican initiatives on these types of things do, it is creating more barriers to access benefits, making it more difficult for people to, you know, to get benefits. I heard some, you know, Democratic legislators call it, basically a penalty for an added penalty for getting fired from your job. And in this moment where, you know, DOGE is, eliminating all sorts of jobs, we just saw last week that the hundreds of jobs with AmeriCorps are being eliminated. You know, doesn't seem like the time to, make it even more difficult for people to access benefits. They even are proposing to change Wisconsin's unemployment insurance program to rename it the Reemployment Assistance instead of unemployment.
Oh,
insurance.
Lordy, that's downright Soviet out of them is to say, well, if we just relabel this as some kind of reemployment assistance, that's going to fix everything. When it does sound exactly like, kick a man while he's down, kick a woman while she's down and jobless and looking for something. We're not going to do anything about the child care crisis that we talked about in the last hour with Corrine Hendrickson. Mm-hmm. And instead, we're talking about these extra hoops, like according to the proposal, as I'm reading off of a Wisconsin Public Radio story here, for example, a person would need to have direct contact with potential employers and expand the current requirements that a person search for work every week until while they're collecting unemployment insurance. And that's, again, on its face, people go, oh, I don't see a problem with that. If you haven't been unemployed and you haven't faced that barrier of trying to make direct contact, if you've got a small business, on your long to-do list, is one of them making time to greet everybody that comes to your front door and says, hey, do you got a job? Or do you find some other way to get around it, making it tough to have direct contact, making it tough to justify getting your benefits? It's one hoop after another that Republicans want poor people to jump through.
Yeah, I'm quoting again from that same Wisconsin Public Radio story from a few weeks ago. Ahmad Rivera-Wagner said, this body wants to add hoops and red tape complications at a time when people are yearning for help, not punishment. And instead of extending a hand, we're adding to add more government to track down fraud that barely exists. So there's a number of different bills here that are part of this package. They have all now passed the assembly, and today they have a public hearing in the state Senate. As these continue to move through, the tighter majorities now that we have in the Wisconsin state legislature, I expect these bills to pass. But I would, take note of take some of those swing votes as they make their way through the Senate. There's going to be some people who are going to be defending their record. And if you are creating more barriers to, let's say Medicaid at a time when our senior senator is saying we should cut Medicaid from the federal budget or in the federal budget, that's going to create some problems for people downstream from these decisions.
It's going to create a lot of problems for people downstream from these decisions. And again, I always feel like I shouldn't have to say this, but because some people love jumping to conclusions in the comment sections, people go, oh, you guys are defending, fraud and waste and abuse. And we're just getting back to Ronald Reagan's, welfare queen mythology here. Of course, there are people who abuse a system. Any system has people that come in and try to get around the rules. But to take something and do something so radical with it, with so very little fraud, it doesn't matter if you're talking about election fraud or unemployment compensation. Again, you're picking on kind of the smallest thing to justify getting rid of the program when, just be who you are and say, I don't think unemployed people should get help. I don't think, whatever. Add your extreme position here, Dan, and stop trying to, just weasel around it saying, oh, this is all about waste, fraud, and abuse. We've long since shown where that is just not substantial enough to justify throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
You're absolutely right. And it's this constant tension that you have when it comes to these types of bills, too, because it's just like, I think you know, Democrats want to say, hey, well, let's you know, bolster the safety net. Let's extend more options for health care to people, fund education, all of these different kinds of things, and be there for people when they need help. And I think, you know, we're looking at right now with some of these federal job cuts, I think people need these types of safety net policies in place to be able to be there when people need them. And you know, this is what Republicans do over and over again. They just chip away and find any way to weaken these programs so that they're ineffective, and then people don't like them, and then they can cut them. And it's the same, you know, you were kind of talking about it before with immigration. It's just like, yes, we want to have a reforms to the immigration system. It is broken. But what Republicans do to legal immigration too is just continue to chip away at all those pathways for people who want to go about the process legally. And it's the same thing with these, you know, access to public benefits and this unemployment insurance and, or, you know, like you said, the Kremlin-esque way of calling it reemployment assistance to go about this.
It's silly and sad all at the same time. Let us switch gears, talking with Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media, about Josh Shulman, the Washington County executive. And I talked a little bit about him yesterday just based on what little I've seen of him from the pandemic onward. So as somebody who's down there in the Milwaukee area, talk to us a bit more about how he is perceived. I certainly sense a stereotypical hostility toward Milwaukee. I certainly heard him playing up his support of Donald Trump's tariffs. So, I mean, is there anything that indicates he would be independent, or should we be expecting, again, like Tony Weed up in Northeast Wisconsin, try to get that early Trump endorsement and be one with all things Trump?
Yeah, I think he is, you know, very much a typical Republican in so many ways. And, you know, one of the things that has, you know, he's been a regular on conservative talk radio in the Milwaukee market. And, you know, that's a really big thing. And he gets his name out there and he makes certain headlines. But he, you know, he talked in his launch video about loving your neighbor. And one of the things that he's done to raise his profile in a really significant way has just been to bash Milwaukee. And it's your typical wow counties versus Milwaukee type of thing. You know, when the Milwaukee raised its sales tax about a year and a half ago now, he posted something out there saying that, you know, hey, come spend your money in Washington County instead of spending it in Milwaukee, where you have a greater sales tax. And it's just like, I get that if you're, you know, a small business and you're advertising, you know, buying furniture or something like that. But it's another thing when you're a politician and you recognize that those shared revenue negotiations that happened went to save a bunch of jobs in city services, in law enforcement, in public safety, in all of these different areas. And I think that was a really cynical ploy. It kind of led to this back and forth between him and the city, the mayor of Milwaukee, Cavalier Johnson, saying that, you know, there was a comment involving Cracker Barrel, if people remember that at all. Mm-hmm. But I also think I want to point this out from Shulman's record as well. So in 2022, he was making a lot of noise, and this about a referendum that he was advancing in Washington County called the Anti-Crime Plan referendum to add 30 and a half positions to the Waukesha County or Washington County Sheriff's Department. And he was really playing this up throughout the whole election cycle during the midterms as, you know, hey, we're in this red county. We're going to fund our police. This was right, you know, in the height of the anti, you know, defund the police backlash that was happening in conservative politics, in particular in the time. And he made a lot of noise over the course of that fall saying that, you know, hey, we're going to do this. Milwaukee cuts its police department. We're going to fund ours, blah, 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 blah. Well, people voted against that referendum pretty resoundingly. And in one of the reddest counties in the state, he failed at his effort to, in this quote unquote anti-crime plan, to add positions to the sheriff's department. And it failed pretty resoundingly. Like it was a 56% of the voters rejected that. So to me, that is, it's just quite the record of non-accomplishment to run on when this was one of your key policy initiatives on kind of a home run issue in a county that votes like 70 to 75% for Republicans most of the time. And he was unable to get that passed. So, you know, he's a divisive politician. He bashes Milwaukee at the same time. He talks about, you know, loving your neighbor and getting back to that type of Wisconsin. He is a typical politician, and he is part of the problem.
Without a doubt. Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media and creator of the Recombobulation Area, where the column this week is about it being time to kill the partial veto. We'll talk more about that as well. But I want to let you know that tomorrow on the program, we will have State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underley, joining us for our weekly homeroom segment. Joe Zepecki joining us as well. I'm Pat Kreitler reminding you, when you finish that Pledge of Allegiance, hit on every word, including the last one, liberty and justice for all. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
If you thought there wasn't nearly enough Pat Kreitler at 8 o'clock and said, we'll just keep him on until 9 o'clock, check this out. He's going to be part of Matt and Air on Air as well. Coming up in the next hour. It's like more me now. I feel like Oprah. I'm going to put out a magazine, put myself on the cover every issue. It's what the people demand, Dan Schaefer. No.
People have spoken and the people have said more Pat Kreitler.
Yeah, no, they most certainly have not, but thankfully management hasn't caught on yet. Hey, the Recombobulation Area had an event recently, a little happy hour thing. How'd that go?
That's right. We got together last Thursday at Third Space Brewing in Milwaukee, one of my favorite breweries in town here. And yeah, it was a great opportunity to see a lot of the people and who, you know, are part of our, you know, part of the Recombobulation Area's extended universe of contributors and supporters and friends and all of that. And it was a wonderful time. To get together and celebrate the goofy little community that we've built over at the Recombobulation Area.
A community that cares. That's right. Really at the bottom line. I mentioned before the break that there was a new column at the Recombobulation Area. I neglected to mention it was a guest column by Emily Mills, who has for years put so much good state stuff musings on social media. And it was her column about killing the partial veto. Although maybe not right away, Dan.
Yeah, Emily's column, I would definitely encourage you to read it. It's a really good one. It talks about how this partial veto that, you know, that even as she, even as they agree with the ends of this, which is public funding public education in Wisconsin, maybe no governor should have this type of power. But I think what they get at here is also kind of one of the tensions that we're facing in this moment as, you know, the Trump administration, you know, moves further towards authoritarianism. Like, is it really the fight that we should be picking right now to address something like this when so much else is happening? So I think that is really an interesting issue to explore more broadly. Like, should we address certain, you know, state level reforms, things like that? Yes, you know, we can walk and chew gum, right? But is, you know, do we also want to see Democrats at this particular moment fighting back against the Trump administration, fighting against the Republican Party in any way they can? So I think that's what makes this such an interesting topic and a good column.
Well, yeah, it is a very good column, and kind of closes with that whole specter of, you know, in some ways we are fighting the creep of fascism of those who will basically use our norms against us. That if they are not rules, if they are not laws, and hell, even if they are laws, sometimes we can get around them. So maybe we should not be unilaterally disarming democracy with some of the weapons that are out there. I too am not saying that this partial veto is perfect and deserved to be around, but at the moment it might be one of the few things that, for example, Governor Tony Evers has with such a hostile legislature. Let me ask you back to Josh Shulman running for governor. Mm-hmm. And we do know that there was a manufacturing CEO down in that area who started a political action committee. So do you get any impression that Republicans are getting set to like clear the decks for Shulman, or was he simply the first of what might be several Republicans to get into a governor's race?
Yeah, I think he's the first of a few. You know, I do expect that this will be a competitive primary in some capacity. Who exactly that will be, that remains to be seen. You know, there's a lot of names kind of being bandied about right now. Tom Tiffany is one of them up in your neck of the woods there, Mr. Kreitlow. Even Eric Hovde has been mentioned as another repeat statewide candidate as well. And you have to wonder if now would be the time for somebody like Brian Steil, who has been a good fundraiser who has overperformed election expectations in his district. Some of the national political news yesterday, one in particular out of Georgia with Brian Kemp choosing not to run for Senate in 2026. Maybe the Republicans who are, somebody like Brian Steil who has overperformed, but maybe they don't want 2026 to be the year that they jump into a statewide race. I do wonder if that's part of the calculus for some folks on the right as well right now.
I don't know why not. I mean, conventional wisdom, if nothing else, tells you that the midterm elections are almost never good for a president. The only real exception being 2004, and that, you know, the Iraq War was still, you know, early on and still had, you know, broader support back then. But this would not seem to me to be the cycle where some folks would necessarily gamble with their careers if they wanted. You want somebody that has nothing to fear, can say whatever they want, and feel like they're bulletproof. So, Ron Johnson, maybe he runs for governor next year, because after all, in today's Journal Sentinel, he all but says get rid of Medicaid. So, I mean, clearly this man has no fear of being labeled as too extreme. Maybe we need to start the shadow campaign of him for governor.
Boy, wouldn't that be something?
Another, it would be something. Ride. I'll tell
that
you
would
that.
Be something. Yeah. I frankly, I don't love your idea, Pat. I don't love it.
Neither do I. It fell out of my mouth, and I'm like, oh boy, is that really what you want? But you know, we are stuck at this point. Stuck isn't the right word. You know, Governor Evers can make his decision when he wants to, but he says it'll be after the budget, and so we're kind of a holding pattern, shall we say? And things are going to happen real fast once Tony Evers makes his decision on 2026.
Absolutely. And I think, there's going to be a lot of dominoes depending that will fall in certain directions based on what the governor decides. But, you know, I think we've kind of gotten into this in part because of Ron Johnson, where candidates are making these decisions a little bit later in the cycle. And I think nationally you see, you know, like the news out of Georgia or news out of Michigan or whatever. But Ron Johnson made his really late in 2022. Eric Hovde made, you know, his decision late to run. A lot of these other self-funders can do that. So I think that's part of it, too.
Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. Dan, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Pat. Rooting for the boat today in Milwaukee.
Root for the boat. My thanks to today's guest, Dan Schaefer, Chad Holmes, Dan Hagen, Corrine Hendrickson, Hans Brighton Moser, Sheila Everhart, Sherita Booker, Christina Laurie, and to you for being here this morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News, the Wisconsin home for Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy newsroom. Enjoy your day. We'll see you tomorrow morning here up north, 6 a.m.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.